Hey, what's going on here? You geeks planning on showing this thing, or are you just gonna act it out for us?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 18, Cigarette Burns. Ouch! And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Well, welcome back, Sarah, in a moment. But first, Dave has site news.
Actual site news. We have a new site for the podcast. Same URL, again with this podcast.com. And if you go there, you'll see it is new and exciting looking, but also behind the scenes and probably of most interest to you, dear listener, is that visual aids are now back for every single episode and they live on the site because I figured out how to do that in a way that doesn't cost us $1 million. So that's nice.
Woo.
And then also transcripts are on the site.
What?
Not all of them yet. I'm slowly working it backwards. So right now, all the Patreon stuff has transcripts and the most recent episodes, and I'm working my way through Beverly Hills right now. So, and over the coming weeks, those will be added. So, go to the site and get your fill of visual aids and transcripts.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
What a lot of work. And now here she is. Sarah's back. Sarah.
It's true.
Yay.
April, yes. Fool, yes. April Fools, no, it's true. I'm back. And thank you, Dave, for all of your incredibly hard work on the site.
And thank you, Adam, for sitting in while Sarah was out.
Yes, God, thank you, Adam.
And what's up with Sarah? AWAWT-wise.
Finally, this Friday, April 17th, again with this, 284. At last, we will be watching and contemplating Leanne Hunley, who played Tamara in Law & Order Special Victims Unit. That is Season 11, Episode 2. It's called Sugar. That's everything that you hope/fear. You can watch that on Hulu. We'll link it in the show notes. And we definitely hope that you will join us again with this podcast.com/club. Because the club members get all of those extra episodes. We do have almost 300 and we're going to just keep going. So you should come along for the ride. We have a pretty good time, usually.
We do. All right, Sarah, are you ready to launch back into the Dawsonverse?
I guess. Let's see.
Let's start with this episode is called Cigarette Burns for no reason. And I assume it was because the movie that is still entitled Oliver's Movie is supposed to be called Cigarette Burns. And then that was like a placeholder idea they never actually put in the script. Otherwise, I don't know what it would be.
Or it's some song title. I don't know what they're doing at this point with the titles, nor do I care.
Fair enough. Let's start with our B plot. Is this the start of Audrey being annoying? When Busy Phil first came on the scene, I think we were both excited because we love her. And then some people who had more recently watched the show than we had were like, I don't know. She hits a point where she really falls off a cliff. And we were like, oh, no. And this might be a portent of things to come, this storyline.
Yeah, we might not be at the cliff, but you could see it from here.
You can. So in what we soon find out is Danny's apartment lent to Pacey while he's in the Caribbean with his very lucky wife, I assume hitting on other women in a new locale. Mm. Pacey and Audrey have just finished an apparently mind-blowing sex move Audrey claims she learned from National Geographic. She's on the bed wrapped in a duvet while Pacey's on the floor in a tank top and boxers. And when he climbs back onto the bed, we can see up his boxer leg that he's in tighty whities. So maybe what made the sex so incredible was that Audrey did whatever it was around or through all of his layers. Not for me to say. Anyway, clip two.
Most guys lose consciousness somewhere in the middle.
Oh, how many guys have you done that with?
Enough so that you've got staying power.
Oh boy. Of course, the door having been opened.
Stud mania. Well in control.
Under too much control, perhaps, undergarment wise.
After some chit chat about the Breckers, Pacey circles back to Audrey's joke. Clip three.
How many is enough?
What you talking about, Willis?
It's not just how many guys. Is enough to...
Have I given access to my most intimate of areas?
Well, yeah. Respectfully, of course.
You're really asking me this question?
No, because it's none of my business. Forget I asked.
Wait. How many girls are you?
Six. Seven, including you.
Didn't take you long to think of that one.
Nope.
Oh, God. Okay, so Sugarman, if you're listening to this, this is a trope.
Yeah.
We're going to argue about how many people each or both of us fucked.
Mm-hmm.
It is not good television, and I am so tired of watching it, especially on this show. Oof.
Yeah, but let's go through his count. He says seven, including Audrey. So Audrey, then going back to Tamara,
mm-hmm.
Joey,
yeah,
Melanie from yeah. House, Nina or Lena, whatever her name was with the curly hair that he slept with at the restaurant.
Right.
And then I guess two others we haven't met that he maybe had sex with to get access to their couch. He was
Wait,
homeless?
So no, it's Tamara is one.
Yes.
No, he boned Karen though, right? Karen? Is that her name?
Oh, yes, he did. He did have sex with Karen. God, I forgot all about her as soon as she left.
Yeah, no, same.
So
who else? Well, oh, Andy. Shit.
Oh my God, Andy.
Will we stop yelling at the writers to get a show Bible?
Sorry.
No, but we might also have some problems in that regard.
God, Andy, we miss you.
Sorry, Andy.
I really do miss her sometimes.
No, me too.
God. Anyway, Audrey says seven is not a lot. And compared to what is what an alarmed Pacey would like to know. Audrey tries to play it off, but of course they end up here. Clip four.
Well, I told you mine.
You don't want to know how many men I've slept with, Pacey. Trust me. You think you do right now, but once I've told you, you'd wish I had.
It's that many?
Let's put it this way. Have you ever heard of Emmanuel, Lady Chatterley, Madonna?
Oh, yeah.
Prudes.
Okay.
Try not to suck any dick on your way through the parking lot. Fuck you! Oh, God. It's agonizing to watch this unfold yet again.
Anyway, back in the dorm room after interrogating Joey about how Audrey looks in Dawson and Oliver's movie, which we will get to, Audrey brings up her sex conversation with Pacey earlier. I really hate the phrase body count in this context, and I'm trying to avoid using it, but that is unfortunately the pithiest way to get through it. So please appreciate my struggle. Audrey recaps what we know, adding that she's debating what to tell Pacey. Joey claims she favors honesty, but that the male ego is fragile, and if Pacey is asking, it means he's insecure. So Audrey shouldn't tell him, is what Audrey surmises. Joey says it depends on what the number is, and Audrey just huffs. And in the next scene, Audrey's in Pacey's car with him, wondering why Joey got dropped off at the front door of the movie screening, we will get to, while Audrey has to stay and look for a parking spot with him. Clip five.
It's all part of the deal.
And what deal would that be?
You know, our arrangement we got going.
And what arrangement would that be?
Well, I mean, I understand there's no clear definitions to the arrangement that we have, but I was thinking actually that we might want to get into that point where we start defining how it is that, God, man, my palms are sweaty. Why is that?
27.
Whew, what?
27 men.
What?
Stop, please!
And that's also a trope right there.
Mm-hmm.
After dealing with the driver, he rear-ended. Pacey returns to his car where Audrey nervously jokes that she should have told him after he parked and asks if he's okay. The car is bruised, but he is. But Audrey meant about the sex thing and Pacey curtly says it's nothing. They're fine. So in the auditorium, Audrey pulls Joey away from flirting with Charlie, which we'll get to, telling her that in case it comes up the next time Joey's talking to Pacey, Audrey has slept with 27 people. A guy walks by just then. Clip six.
Rock and roll.
Bite me, will you?
Will you?
No, that guy's correct. Rock and roll.
Yes. But also, bite me, will you, that's Joey talk, if anything.
Yeah.
Under questioning, Audrey admits the number is not truthful. Joey assumes her real number is higher, but Audrey says that's not the point. On the advice of someone named Mercedes Lowenstein, Audrey has decided that when it comes to men and sex, you can't tell the whole truth. I'm not sure why Mercedes Lowenstein's views on the male ego didn't come up when the apparently much less experienced Joey was opining about it earlier, other than bad writing. But anyway, clip seven.
Audrey, that's terrible advice.
Mercedes Lowenstein is an idiot.
No, Mercedes Lowenstein is a whore.
Okay. Not language we use anymore, nor should we, but she does sell that joke, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Good delivery.
This was like ethical slut era or whatever. Like, sure. Okay, but well, whatever. Where this ends is not my favorite, so let's just get through it so we can get past it.
Yep. Joey states that Audrey has to tell Pacey the whole truth or anything that happens between them from here on will be tainted. Audrey deserves something great, so she has to go do the hard thing. Phrasing. But I have to say, if it's between Mercedes Lowenstein and Joey, Mercedes probably actually knows better what she's talking about in this arena.
Yeah, probably. And also, you have now collected evidence that telling him 27 caused, points on his license. So maybe just leave it.
Mm-hmm. In the lobby, Pacey is guzzling an energy drink and motor-mouthing to Jack about how long this movie's going to be and that all his Red Bull pee will give him a good reason to leave every time Charlie's character is making out with Audrey's. Jack comments that Pacey's really crazy for Audrey, and Pacey confirms that he is, going on about how great she is while Jack watches her approach behind him and listen to Pacey's raving about her until Pacey intuits that she's there, whereupon, clip 8.
I have to be honest. I want to be honest. It's not 27. It's 57.
Oh, boy. Not a spit take.
Mm-hmm.
Later, Audrey's waiting nervously on a bench in the lobby when Pacey finds her and starts in on a speech about her big number. Audrey tries to interrupt, but he stops her. He knew that she had slept with other guys. He jokes that he knows deep in his heart she didn't enjoy it. And while he may be a little insecure about that, it's his hang-up, and all that really matters is the two of them now, because he has totally fallen for her. And they make out for a bit before Audrey stops and admits her real number is 5. He doesn't believe her since Joey has told him some things and he has seen her with other guys. But Audrey says she's just, and this is her term, a makeout slut, because she believes you have to kiss a lot of guys to know when one is right.
1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Clip 9.
You were testing me. You wanted to know how I'd react.
Yeah. Maybe a little. I'm really, really sorry, Pacey. It's just, I guess, that I have my own fears too, and I don't know. I think I just needed to hear it.
Did I pass?
Well, you aced.
Annoying.
I hate this. I hate this.
It's so stupid.
I hate this for her.
Yes.
I hate this for us.
Yep.
She should have been like, actually, it was 77. Come at me, bros.
Mm-hmm.
That she would test him in this way is out of character with what we've seen.
Yes.
From her so far, like, if you want a sort of saintly, soulmatey, waits for love character, that is completely fine. You already have that.
Mm-hmm.
Let Audrey be Audrey.
Sure.
And it just undermines the character. And Pacey, honestly, like, he should really be examining why he's relieved that her number is lower than his. Like, ugh,
yeah.
God. Fucking gross.
It feels like they had an idea of her character earlier in the season, which was like a free spirit who's having fun in college and fooling around with a lot of guys because why not?
Yes.
And then when they got her together with Pacey, it had to be like, well, he can't be with a woman like that.
No.
Just like, so dumb. Even and especially since if she's insecure about what he's going to think about her past, like we already had the scene, which we heard of the two of them in the car where he was like dancing around trying to define the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And she just ignored that part of like he is saying what his interest is. He wants to be exclusive. This is what he's getting at. And instead, you're playing mind games.
Yeah.
And this is still a fight in the next episode. It's extra dumb.
Yeah, another on the relationship trope list that I'm just like, oh, yes, the DTR. Okay, just talk to each other, but we can talk about that idiot plot next time.
Right. For now, I have to talk about a plot with some other idiots. The A plot, in which emotions run high at and around the first public screening of Oliver's movie. We open this on the final moments of Dawson's movie on his little TV screen in his room, and then his credit, and then we pan over to Joey, who is sniffling away tears, but also looking defeated, which, okay, that I get.
After enough of these, yeah.
Seriously, you can see her in the visual aids. So just before Dawson pops his head up from the stairs to ask if it's over, I wouldn't have necessarily given Dawson credit for knowing he shouldn't sit there and watch Joey watching it. So the character has grown, and I acknowledge that. Joey has finished all 2 hours and 45 minutes abusive, and Dawson sheepishly says he knows the cut is way too long. He asks if she's crying, which she was. Katie Holmes is better at this than Busy Phillips was back in episode 14, but she only grudgingly admits the truth when he presses her. And Dawson, looking way too proud under his new Easter chick hair, which you can see in the visual aids, says tears are a good thing. Not if she was bored to tears, Joey shoots back, but then she takes it back. Nothing brings out the bully in her more than a nervous filmmaker. And he finally demands to know what she thought. She says it's really good, like something could actually happen with it. LOL, I doubt it.
No.
She was crying because it felt amazing to be there for the moment her best friend became exactly what he's dreamt about his entire life. She would also be forgiven for crying because she remembers being on set moments before that final scene was the last thing she did before getting fucking mugged. So maybe watching this would be a little traumatic for her, but she doesn't say any of that. We've forgotten all about the mugging already.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
Good, because it was a bad episode, but
fine. It's like season two of Friday Night Lights. This did not happen.
Sure. But, it, you know, if she were a real person, it would affect her more than we see. Uh-huh. She does say she was surprised by how great Charlie was. Dawson jokes that Charlie barely passes for human but comes alive on screen. And Joey replies, clip 10.
He's not that bad of a guy, Dawson.
He's not that bad a guy is what you say.
And also agree, he's just boring and he's taking up space and I cannot wait to be rid of this fucker. Yeah.
But also if Joey is, according to Professor Wilder, the future of American letters, I would like her to be more familiar with which words are and are not necessary in that phrase.
Yeah, well, I'd like a lot of things.
Yeah. They go on, clip 11.
I know he was a jerk to Jen, but I think that was more out of fear than anything else.
No, for sure. Definitely. Oh.
Yeah.
Fear of what? Fear of being tied down, maybe.
That she was going to borrow his curling iron and break it?
Dawson is very nicely letting Joey continue to delude herself that there's more to Charlie than being a fuckboy when Oliver joins them, appalled that Dawson, as he puts it, dumped Betty and already has Veronica in his bed. Before Joey can yell at him, he repeatedly asks how she liked the movie until she shuts him up to tell him. And Oliver is pleased. Clip 12.
It's high time we screen this puppy.
Yeah, not yet. We still got a lot of work to do.
Well, then you better get to work, Chief. Tomorrow is approaching awfully fast.
Excuse me?
Oh, I forgot to tell you, didn't I? Silly me.
Silly what?
We're screening the movie tomorrow at school. For cast, crew, and assorted highbrow intellectuals.
No, we're not.
See, I knew you'd have that reaction. That's why I went around you.
Okay. I'm not one of these people who's like every millennial had to get a participation trophy, but this is behavior of someone who has been too affirmed by the town of Hooksett, New Hampshire, who treated him like he was their very own Quentin Tarantino. Like, this is not how any of this works, you idiot.
No, not in a city of proper size anyway, even in a Viz Arts school.
Yes, even there.
Hey.
When Dawson runs after Oliver, Joey rewinds the movie to get a nice long look at Charlie's cheekbone and yearn. And after the credits, we're at Viz Arts, where Oliver's declaring that theirs is not only the best movie he's ever been associated with, but maybe the best movie ever. Dawson disagrees. Clip 13.
It's way too long. It's like The English Patient without the laughs.
There was something I am finding Dawson quite charming of late, possibly because I am grieving the loss of the beak, but and he's not even from New Jersey originally, but the absolute, like, down the street from Nautilus Diner, it's way too long.
It's way too long.
Thanks, yeah. Boo. I feel seen.
Yeah, it was a very Ian Ziering delivery.
It was. It absolutely was.
Complimentary.
Mm-hmm.
Dawson says the movie still needs tons of work, major cuts, and full reshoots, particularly the sex scene in which Charlie's crank is not only visible, but practically requires its own credit. Release that cut, is what I say. Oliver says that when this movie is inevitably acquired by a major studio, they can CGI that out. Dawson makes a very funny look of disbelief that you can see in the visual aids. Oliver decides Dawson's real problem is that he's messed up about his breakup with Jen after she helped him grieve and robbed him of his precious flower, which is how Oliver puts it. And sidebar, nothing about Dawson and Oliver's relationship as portrayed for us would suggest Dawson would tell Oliver that Jen was his first.
No.
When Oliver asks, Dawson says no, he doesn't want to talk about the breakup. And in that case, would Dawson be okay if Oliver asked Jen out? And Dawson just stares instead of laughing in his face and daring him to give it a shot. Although the new dumb Jen, I am sad to say, I don't know how good her judgment is in this moment. At least they did establish that Oliver was hot for Jen. That goes back to the film festival.
Yes, it does.
Speaking of the new dumb Jen, our first glimpse of her is when Dawson enters the kitchen and sees her holding a coffee cup, looking dreamily at apparently nothing. You could see this in the visual aids. She's just like looking toward the cupboards, like there's nothing there. Credit to the props department for sourcing the bottle of Hood dairy milk, which even I know is accurate to New England.
Mm-hmm.
When Jen hears Dawson enter, Jen, she straightens up to show us her New Jersey Charm School t-shirt.
Yeah.
I checked to see if you could get it anywhere and you can't. So Dave made us one for the store. Go
to truemethods.com
to buy your own. Jen asks what's going on and Dawson says nothing, then corrects himself and drowns her in word vomit about the movie screening he's not ready for. When Jen responds by gazing at him indulgently, he asks why she's smiling and she tells him it's okay if this is awkward, even though that seemed not awkward at all. He was dumping all his shit on her exactly the same way he would if they were still dating. But he laughs in relief as she says it would be odd if they did know how to do this next part. And he agrees, wistfully saying the scene is so familiar. The two of them checking in with each other before their days properly start. Jen hopes they still can do that. Dawson says the last time she was at the counter, he was covering her face in kisses. Now that's over, which I think I know better why she dumped him. But what Jen does is step closer to him and give him a long peck on the cheek, asking who's to say what they can and can't do. And please don't do that. He's not emotionally equipped for any ambiguity on this question. And you're probably kind of too fucked for it either. Sorry. Go back to therapy. Go ahead.
Yeah. Like I was saying this on my advice column, like 25 years ago, like there have to be boundaries and don't do that. Like, so you're saying there's a chance, like,
yeah.
Just don't leave it open like that. Not that he took it that way, but still, no. That's not a good idea.
It's not a good precedent to set. Over to the dorm at Worthington, where Joey is just trying to comb her damaged hair when Audrey materializes over her shoulder asking about the movie. She peppers Joey with questions about herself, and Joey pretends she sucked before saying she was great, looked incredible, and had amazing chemistry with Charlie. Also saying to Audrey that he was surprisingly good, but Audrey has no interest in him and changes the subject back to herself until Joey says she's going to see the movie herself in a matter of hours. Audrey suddenly notices that Joey looks hot. She looks the same as always. She like doesn't even have eye makeup on and starts to ask about that before asking if Audrey looks hot in the movie until Joey's sharp look gets her to stop and change the subject again to her sex record, which we've already talked about too much.
Mm-hmm.
Then Jen is answering the door to a friendly-looking man she doesn't know who says hello and then just kind of stands there until she pleasantly asks if she can help him. He addresses her by name and then introduces himself as Clifton. He is played by Afemo Omalami, whom I know from the Lifetime TV movie version of Steel Magnolias, where he played Drum, Malin's husband, the Tom Skerritt character from the movie. Yeah.
God, I forgot about that. Sure.
That movie is good. Check it out. I'm sure it's still on the Lifetime app. Clifton says that Jen's grandmother told him Jen was very beautiful, but he guesses some things can't be expressed in words. And then Jack comes down behind Jen, and when Clifton addresses him as Dawson, Jack corrects him, and we get this, clip 14.
Jack, the homosexual. Nice to meet you.
You too.
I'm a friend of Evelyn's. She invited me to join you all this evening for the screening of Dawson Leary's film.
Nice.
Ah, Mr. Smalls.
I see. Introductions have already been made.
Get a hold of yourself, Jennifer.
I'm sorry. What was that you were doing with the kissing? Why did you... Young lady, do you have a boyfriend? Cliff, are you my grandma's boyfriend?
Jennifer, I don't think...
Yes, I am. I think. Aren't I?
Yes. Yes, you are.
Oh, my goodness. Why... Did this just slip your mind? Is this something that you just forgot to mention to me?
Should Clifton and I leave you two alone for a minute? Because we can do that.
Cliff, what do you do?
You've got to be kidding.
I teach geometry at St. Jude's Episcopal on the east side.
Are you married?
Not currently. I was. She passed away. I'm a widower.
All right. Do you approve? Maybe leave now.
This is how you do the define the relationship talk.
Yeah. Yes, find your grandchildren, Pacey.
Also, Clifton, known as Cliff, that was the original XD Bunting. So I choose to take that as a little shout out.
Aw.
A grandfatherly figure named Clifton. Love it.
Although he is the second Cliff of the show, that was also the Scott Foley character, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I always got a 2F Clifford vibe from that guy.
Mm, true.
This 1F Cleef.
Right. So, yeah, obviously I know why Clifton was introduced like this for TV drama purposes, but Grams, as written, would have told Jen and Jack that her friend would be coming tonight to make sure that they were warm and respectful to him, I feel.
And then would have told them that it was none of their business and she wasn't going to have any shenanigans at the door.
Yeah.
Then you think she also would have told Mr. Smalls to be like something other than Jack the homosexual.
Right.
Like, oh, no. Why is this happening to everyone?
Yeah.
In Grams's giant house.
It's true. But I do think if Grams had been seeing Clifton long enough to call him her boyfriend and Jen hasn't noticed or asked where she goes, that's on Jen for being self-involved.
And yeah, and on the writers for making her traumatic brain injury survivor, as they have of late. And I don't care for it.
No. At VizArts, Meredith Salinger bustles in, so busy fighting on her phone with what is obviously a recent ex over his academic credentials and splitting up their CDs that she doesn't know Dawson is in the room until he asks if she's okay. She snits at him for being nosy, and he mildly apologizes, but adds that she talks pretty loud. She softens a little as she says he's caught her in the middle of a breakup. Dawson rudely asks who dumped whom, but she answers, he dumped her. Clip 15.
Which really infuriates me because I can't say even like the guy. He's an idiot. He just happens to be a very attractive idiot, which infuriates me even more because I always thought I was above that, which I'm obviously not.
Everyone doesn't have to talk like this. Please.
Yeah.
Jesus. Dawson
yeah.
gives her a perfunctory smile and seems fine, not engaging further, but she asks him if a lit vac still teaches there. Dawson laughs that this semester lit vac is teaching boobs, booze, and bullets, style and substance in the age of the blockbuster. Clip 16.
Oh, God, you're in the middle of that phase, aren't you?
She said condescendingly.
Oh, come on, you know that phase where you've just been exposed to the very best the avant-garde has to offer. So, of course, Hollywood sucks the big one. And wouldn't it be great if we could all just run around with our little digital cameras filming each other going to the bathroom in the name of truth and honesty?
He didn't even say he's taking that class. Like, what the
no, fuck? No, he didn't. Like, if anything, oh my God, like late 90s, early aughts film classes always were named that shit. Or like, I don't know, New Yorker panels were called that shit.
Yeah.
So that's the real dated eye roller, but he didn't say anything about what he felt about anything.
No.
Either way, you don't even know if he's a film student. He could just be there borrowing equipment for a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Are you like this?
However, Dawson just smirks that she's a handful and clip 17.
And quite presumptuous, too, considering you don't know anything about me.
Oh, sure I do. I know everything about you. Favorite movie of the last couple years off the top of your head? Don't even think about it.
Run, Lola, Run.
Liar. That's the movie you whip out to show people how cool you are. I'm not interested in cool. I'm interested in the movie that made you cry and you have no idea why. I'm interested in the movie that you're embarrassed to tell your friends you went to go see on opening night. Want to know mine is?
Please.
Hardball. Keanu Reeves coaches this inner city little league team and in the process changes their lives for the better. I lost it. I mean, I cried like a baby. I saw it in the theater 5 times.
That explains that then.
What?
Why your boyfriend dumped you? You're a sentimental drama queen with really crappy taste in movies.
Wow. What is your name, little man?
Dawson. Dawson Leary.
Oh.
What?
Nice to meet you, Dawson. My name is Amy Lloyd. I'm the film critic for the Boston Weekly. I'm here to review your movie.
Wow.
Okay.
Hardball is bad.
Not getting a good review. Just tell her to fuck off then.
Yeah.
You were right the first time. Also, Run Lola Run is a perfectly legit choice. Yes. Fuck off, Meredith Salinger.
It's not even that pretentious. Like, just because it's in German doesn't mean it's particularly intellectual.
No, it was playing at a multiplex near my then apartment.
Ours too.
Yeah, wasn't that hard to see. And it also fucking ruled. Anyway.
Over to what is definitely the auditorium that we always saw at Cape Side High, only now with a hideous Viz Arts Boston banner on the back wall. You can see in the visual aids.
Oh, my God.
Joey wanders in and looks around, somehow walking straight past Charlie's dandelion hair, even though he's sitting on the aisle. But then he addresses her and get 2 full minutes of their tiresome flirting. He's not there with his fiancée, Gwyneth? No, he met someone better, amazing even, but if she shows up, he'll just make Joey move. When Joey tells him she saw the movie and he was good in it, Charlie asks why she's different tonight. She doesn't answer, but says he's different too. Clip 18.
You know, sometimes the actual Charlie Todd rears his little deformed head.
Raising.
I know it's not as...
It's nice. It's nice when you're not trying so hard. Kind of like hanging out with a real person rather than a hypnotist quotation.
What? My guess is that was supposed to be hypnotist quotient, but that doesn't make much more sense than what she said. But I think she just fucked it up.
This whole thing is really like they just decided this needed to be an obstacle in the back third of the season. And so everyone's trying to make it work. But like, how is this any more real? This is just like Dawson's characters, Dawson's dialoguing next to each other and their chemistry is non-existent. So I don't even know, like nothing against Chad Michael Murray, really. Like I sat through an entire performance of his Ted Bundy. Like, he's perfectly capable. He did what he could, but I just don't understand why we all have to be here for this.
Yeah. Charlie says he's not actually the devil, and Joey laughs that the jury's still out on that. And then after an artsy transition from Pacey driving off in his car that glides straight into Oliver standing at the back of the auditorium, Dawson finds Oliver there and yells at him about inviting a film critic to the screening without running it by Dawson first. Oliver, a moron, has no idea why it would be bad to get feedback from a qualified expert on a work in progress, which is when Amy herself rolls up to ask about the holdup. Oliver excitedly introduces Amy and Dawson, who both grumble that they have met, not cute. And Oliver says they're still waiting for a couple of what he calls VIPs instead of VIPs, but Amy tells them to call her when they've got their shit together. As she leaves, Oliver demands to know what Dawson did, and Dawson gives the very abridged version. And panicking, Oliver tells him about some kid whose thesis film Amy panned because he insulted Point Break, sending said kid to work at the video store in his forgotten hometown. Dawson has to go apologize and get her back, and instead of saying he doesn't want to show her a version of the film he already thinks has serious structural issues, Dawson agrees. And while he's doing that, Oliver's going to go hit on Dawson's ex, he says. So Dawson catches up to Amy outside, telling her he never would have said those things if he had known who she was. She guesses he would have kissed her ass if he had, and Dawson's like, no, well, yeah, probably, but he is a huge fan of hers. At least he owns it. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I know.
Amy doesn't believe that movie critics have fans, but Dawson disagrees. Clip 19.
It's not true. Roger Ebert has fans. Harry Knowles has fans.
Oh!
Did he?
That's a name I haven't heard in years.
I know. Seriously.
But yes, that's not true. Harry Rogers, like, give him a second take. What? How much of a hurry are you guys in this season? Fuck.
I know. The show's named after his character. Give him another take. Yes. God.
Amy tells Dawson to go stalk Roger or Harry, but Dawson would rather stalk her. She's cuter. And this gets a smile Dawson tries to build on, quoting from her review of Almost Famous, in which she called it the kind of film that reminds us why we go to the movies. I can't believe the show's writer couldn't come up with something less generic than that. Dawson adds that reading it gave him chills, and Amy says she got chills writing it. Gross. Don't say that, even if it's true.
No.
But also, you didn't. You could have said that about any movie. It's meaningless. But that gives him an opening to continue kissing her ass. His ritual every Thursday is to get the weekly, go to a coffee shop, and read her reviews. He doesn't always agree, but he always wants to know what she thinks, which is why the thought of her watching something he directed is so scary. Amy says instead they should go to a coffee shop now and keep talking. She's in a strange mood, so he might get lucky. And instead of saying, people are already sitting in the theater waiting for my shit to start, he goes with her. And when Joey returns from advising Audrey on her sex record, Charlie admits he's nervous about the screening. That girl he told her about is there, and he really wants to impress her and for her to see him the way he wants her to. Joey asks him to point this girl out, and Charlie admits she's sitting right next to him. Oh my God, we figured that out already.
What?
Joey says Charlie's not nearly as cool as he thinks he is. Everything he's thinking and feeling is written all over his face. He tries to test her with a new expression and clip 20.
You're thinking that I'm the most attractive and formidable woman you've ever been in the same room with. Though you're terrified of rejection, you like me and you want to take me out on a proper date.
Really? Nope.
No?
Mm-mm. Actually, I was thinking that I want to take you into the bathroom and do ungodly things to you.
What'd you say?
Nothing. No, it was a joke. I was joking.
I'm going to go check on Dawson.
I just blew it, didn't I? I am the devil.
Why is she that offended?
Right.
Like, you were Frenching a professor not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Really? And also, if you don't want to do it, fine. But, like, isn't the whole crux of the problem with your attraction to Charlie not just that it's, like, a violation of girl code or whatever, but that you only want to fuck him and don't actually care about his personality?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just go in the bathroom and put an end to this.
Yeah. Why is that so offensive? Yeah. Also, yeah. Her, like, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking I'm great. It's like, this season's Joey is so unbearable.
Unbearable.
She's so full of herself.
And she's not even good at it.
No.
Like, at least when Dawson was self-absorbed, it came from, like, decades of practice and you bought it.
Yes.
You could tell Katie Holmes is just like, wait, I'm doing what? Like, oh, God, no. This does not work.
No. In an off-screen negotiation, Oliver somehow lured Jen back in the classroom where Dawson and Amy just met. Jen notices his nerves and assumes it's about the screening, but he tells her it's because of her. Ever since she and Dawson broke up, he's been nervous around her. Jen nicely says she's going to be direct and say she doesn't see anything ever happening between them, though as he just stands there absorbing the blow, she can't help being touched by his moistening puppy eyes. When she turns around to leave, Oliver shoots his shot anyway. Clip 21.
I know that I'm not particularly slick or say, socially adept. And I know that I'm not the kind of guy that women look at and say, whoa, check him out. But I'm gonna blow your mind in a million different ways that you've never even imagined.
Okay, Oliver.
You know it too. And you know that when you look at me, it'll be different. Which is why you're not turning around right now, because you're nervous about what you might find.
Jeez, with all due respect to your sudden and plentiful enthusiasm and confidence, I am going to turn around in 3 seconds just to prove that you're wrong. 1, 2, 3. Jeez.
And he has just vanished from the room, and leaving this conversation is the first time we've seen Oliver do anything in silence, I believe. So credit to him for managing that, I guess.
Yay.
Jen then runs into Joey in the lobby, neither of them very optimistic that the screening's going to happen, nor eager to find Dawson. When they step outside, Joey asks Jen if she's ever met a guy who's really hot and charming, but who, when she got to know him, turned out to be kind of a loser. Jen says that's been her trajectory with every guy she's ever dated, except, and stopping there is how Joey knows she means Dawson. Jen then tells Joey about Graham's dating someone she describes as an African-American man. She doesn't know that. He could be Caribbean-Canadian, for all she knows, which is why we just say black now, but that his name is Clifton Smalls. Joey's surprised but guesses it's a good thing, and Jen says it's great because it suggests that once she and Joey are done dating losers, there might be a Clifton Smalls waiting for them, too. And I would just like to say, Joey had a Clifton Smalls. His name was Elliot, and she threw him in the fucking trash.
Yeah. But
Joey just smiles because she's trash, too, and then says, that's a long time. Justice for Elliot. I'll never be over it, honestly.
I mean, and for what? Well, for we what? Know for what. Let's just not go back there. He was so cute.
Over to the same coffee shop location they always use, where Amy invites Dawson to convince her to go to a screening. They're both making a big assumption that it's not already happening without them. I would say it's not, but it could be.
Should be.
Dawson admits that he's not sure Amy should see it since he doesn't think it's done. Amy asks what it's about, and when he starts to say it's a love story, she says she doesn't mean the plot. What is it about for him? And he launches into his season 5 story, from dropping out of USC through the nothing that happened with Joey to Mitch's death to getting dumped by Jen, concluding that the movie's not really about any of that, but is also in another sense about all of that because he put his all into it. And Amy says a movie made with that much passion is something she would love to see. Plus, Dawson's a fan, so it satisfies her enormous ego. Haha, but seriously, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
When they get up, she notices her ex behind them and hisses at Dawson to kiss her. Even assuming the character's age down, Meredith Salinger was 31 when this episode aired, although I guess she doesn't know Dawson is a freshman. But regardless of our feelings about it, they kiss us into the episode's last commercial break. When they finally finish kissing on the other side of the commercials, Amy asks if her ex saw. Dawson obviously doesn't know what he looks like, and when Amy peeks, she starts laughing because it wasn't even him. She's sorry, but Dawson tells her not to be, and then I guess walks funny back to VizArts and back to campus. Amy becomes the latest season 5 adult to have no compunction dumping the details of her messy life on a teenager. See also Karen, Danny, Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
Amy's saying she doesn't know why she's so fucked up about her ex when she mostly wanted to claw his eyes out. Dawson, so wise, says breakups are hard even when you know a relationship isn't right. You miss the comfort of having someone to come home to. You come home to your ex all the time. This movie for him held his life together at a time he needed it most, making him brave and strong. Not the scenes that we've seen, but sure.
Yeah. Also, you didn't write it, so I'm not sure why auteur theory is happening here, but okay.
Yeah. Amy abruptly announces that she has had an insight. Dawson isn't worried about the movie being unfinished. He's worried he is unfinished, and he should be because he's not yet and may never be. Working through that is what being a filmmaker is all about. Ugh, thank God that's not true. But Dawson calls that a good insight, and Amy says, let's go watch ourselves a movie, annoyingly. And if it sucks, she promises to tell Dawson over coffee, and he might just get to make out with her again. Lady, please aim higher. But then, clip 22.
By the way, mine is Roadhouse. With Patrick Swayze. I've seen it like 37 times. Every time it's on TV, I have to watch it all the way through. I own the tape. I love it. I have no idea why.
That's a good one.
That's not from the past few years. It's from 1989, but yes, it is a good one. And if you don't know why it's your favorite, you're dumb.
Yeah. Also, congratulations for inventing the concept of the Poppy Fields movie, but not stealing the term. Well done.
And then Dawson and Amy are returning to the auditorium, where somehow people who've been waiting for at least an hour are still waiting. I hope Grams and Clifton went to a bathroom to do ungodly things to each other during the delay. They have lived too much life to put up with this kind of bullshit. Oliver is amazed that Dawson actually got Amy back and looking so cheerful about it, even more so when he asks how Dawson did it, and Dawson says he made out with her. Joey, having moved two seats away from Charlie, spots Grams and Clifton a few roads ahead of her, quietly chatting and smooching, and she smiles. And that's when Charlie looms up over Joey and asks a favor. Which guy is asking? The nervous and vulnerable one she sat down with, or the cocky jerk she walked away from? Charlie says he deserves that, but Joey's really asking. Charlie's trying to figure out which guy he is, even though his hemp choker makes it pretty clear to me. But all Charlie knows is that when Joey joined him, she was acting different toward him than she ever has before, and he doesn't know what he did. Joey mumbles that it wasn't him. She was confused. Whatever it was, Charlie screwed it up, trying to be funny and failing, because he does want to ask her out, and she makes him nervous. She knows. Now who's a cocky jerk? Her, full of herself, like I was saying before. She makes Charlie want to be the first guy, Charlie says, and the favor is for her to let him sit next to her so she can get back to whatever made her like him, and she pushes down the seat, and he sits in it. And Jack and Jen have just joined Grams and Clifton when Oliver walks past Jen, shooting her a smug smile that makes her exhale an involuntary, oh my God, that she then denies to Jack. She said, Jen, you aim higher too.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dawson, still in his dumb leather jacket, is trotting up to the stage and receiving a round of applause instead of Rotten Tomatoes from the crowd whose time he has wasted. He does at least apologize for that and then lists all the problems with the presentation they're about to see, including that they still don't have a title. The audience might be the only people ever to see this movie on a screen, but as we get an insufferable crossfady montage of all the credits cast, plus Oliver and Amy, and then St. Joey a second time, it will always be a snapshot of where they all were in this moment. Dawson calls to the poor projectionist to roll it, and then the executive producers of Dawson's Creek's names appear on the screen in the scene. Everyone, shut up forever. I demand to know how late this actually is, because I would be insane if I'd gone to this thing as a favor. Of course.
Oh, my God. I would have left hours before. I'd just been like, look, you're clearly not organized. Call me never. But, quote, sorry, I had to study. No.
Let's close it up by naming our MVP. Grams!
I'm going to go with Dawson. I don't know. Like, he made some good points. That was a good movie. Mm-hmm. He should have stuck to his guns with Run, Lola, Run, and he was charming. And it's nice to be able to give it to him. But honorable mention to the rock and roll guy, because really. Yeah.
Least valuable player. Oliver, what is wrong with you? This is not how this shit works.
No. The writers, for two reasons. First of all, let Audrey be Audrey, have the courage of her convictions. Mm-hmm. Also, if they're like, if every Charlie contains two wolves, have them be distinguishable from one another, or write the character off because the actor can't fucking do it. Because that's where we are. Like, mm-hmm. I don't understand what they're even trying to do with this, and I don't care. End it now. Next time and again with this, doesn't happen. It's a disappointing spring break for the gang. As Oliver gets a soulmate backstory info dump from Dawson, Jen gets a cold, Jack gets too drunk, again, Pacey gets jealous of Audrey's high school boyfriend, and we all get even sicker of Charlie's bullshit. You should get your hands on some roll aids before you look at our visual aids. That's all the critical screenshots and GIFs that we do for every episode of the podcast. You can find them, along with the episodes themselves, on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm the English patient without the laughs, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Hypnus Quotation, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is all part of the deal. Talk to you next time.
Ooh. What?